the Commonwealth.
May it please the court, my name is John Mayoris, and I have the pleasure of representing James Seth Brown, the appellant in this case. I would like to reserve 3 minutes.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
There are two charges, there are two assignments of error. One is on a conviction for contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and the other is on a sufficiency argument on a felony failure to appear. I'll start with the felony failure to appear, if I may. The appellant failed to show up for his preliminary hearing, and he did get on the stand and testify why it was proven in court that he had notice. There was condition of his bond. Those were introduced. When he took the stand, his explanation was that he had a co-defendant. That's the mother of his child. She hired counsel. Case got continued. He assumed that it got continued as well. I think his exact statement was, well, it was if one court date gets changed for one, it automatically gets changed for another. And I understand the law on the for felony failure to appear in the Hunter case of basically lays out that if you receive timely notice and you can prove notice and you knew your date, you didn't show that the fact finder may infer that the failure to appear was willful. But it's not a strict liability statute. I mean, willful is a part of the statute. Hunter goes on and lists the Harrell case where it does show that Harrell and Lambert and Lynch, essentially explaining what willful means in this context.
Counsel, is your argument essentially that the trial judge used the wrong standard here and failed to reach the question of the willful element?
Yes. And I think when he makes his finding and says you took a calculated risk, he doesn't say, I don't believe you. He doesn't say, as the Commonwealth, it's true that the fact finder can, you know, he's a convicted felon, he's the defendant, he can take his testimony with a grain of salt. But the judge said, you took a calculated risk. You thought it was continued, you never verified that. And our argument is that that's not willful. Willful, I know it's been defined, and you know, when I get to the contributing link to a minor, you know, willful has been defined in different ways in different types of cases, and I'm not sure exactly why that is. But in the failure to appear context, the only thing I can really see that is it's the act must have been done purposefully, intentionally, or designedly.
Counsel. I realize that the judge used the word calculated risk, but the sentences right before that would suggest a willful standard, because the judge said, if you had any question as to what your date was, et cetera, you certainly could have contacted, and then goes on to say, you just took a calculated risk and didn't show up. That's willful.
I don't think it is. I don't think he's saying that that you knew this was your court date and that you willfully failed to appear. He's saying that you thought it was continued. You did not verify that.
If you could have. If you did this, you could have done that. Doesn't that reflect that the judge didn't believe that? He didn't know that the date.
Well, then I don't understand the calculated risk part, because it wouldn't be a calculated risk. It would be that you knew that you were missing this court date because you never verified it.
Okay. I see your position. Okay.
And that's my position on that. And I feel that with that evidence, without a direct finding that he did disbelieve the appellant, that hasn't reached the standard of a willful failure to appear.
So I just want to make sure I understand your point about the willfulness. You're not saying that the judge used an incorrect standard. You're saying that the judge knew that the standard was willful, but just found willful when the evidence didn't support it?
I think that's what he did. I think he had the correct standard in mind. He just misapplied it here by saying that I don't know how it was willful and a calculated risk.
If the judge says you're taking a calculated risk, doesn't that suggest that that's an intentional act, that the defendant in this case was intentionally remaining ignorant? It was a calculated risk. He made the conscious decision not to check it out.
I read it as more that it was a calculated risk that he thought that date was changed. And since he didn't verify it, that was the risk he took. But I don't think that's evidence of willfulness, because he thought that it's his risk, and he was wrong on it, but he thought that it was continued.
Why isn't the risk that he's going to be charged with the failure to appear? You took a calculated risk that we weren't going to charge you with the failure to appear.
I think in the context that my argument fits it better than that. I mean, I guess that is a possible reading of what he meant. But I think in context, is the risk was that you didn't verify that your date was changed. And the next assignment of error is on the contributing to delinquency of a minor. Once again, it's a willful argument. It's a different willful standard. I don't know why it's not the same standard. Or maybe it should be. And this is a somewhat complicated case. The child was found alone outside the hotel or in the hotel. They couldn't find either parent till the next day. The only real evidence we have is that the room was searched. There are pill bottles, prescription pill bottles. Nothing was tested. We don't know when exactly that room became in that state during that night. The only evidence we really have is from the defendant's own word that was played on the video with his conversation with the detective, is that when he left that night, he left Amalian, or the child, with the mother and another friend. And though there are some factors there, there's not really a lot of direct evidence to show, was there really any drug abuse going on in that room? Was there anything going on in front of Amalian? Did that play a factor into anything that was going on? Nothing was tested. I know the appellant was tested the day after when he spoke with the court services, the Family Protection Services, and he did test positive for marijuana and some other drugs, but some of those drugs, and he had at least said, I think, coincide with those prescriptions. But what we don't have is a toxicologist to say what the levels were in his system. Nobody indicates that he was intoxicated the next day. I think the tester actually said he didn't appear to be intoxicated. And
counsel, let me just interrupt you a second, because I want to be sure I'm clear on what your argument is. So on the sufficiency, you're only challenging the element of willfulness.
There was not an issue. Yes, correct.
That failed to show willful.
A willful act or omission.
Okay. What about, address the fact that the child was roaming around outside at early morning hours?
Well, I know that would fit the rest of the statute in terms of a child needs services or need of supervision. We're not arguing that. The question, and I think the evidence isn't clear on it, is how any trier of fact could reach the decision that the appellant was the one who created that situation when he left. And the only evidence we have is that when he left, the child was with his mother and another friend.
Well, and let me ask you about that. So I realized that in this case, it was a very strange set of circumstances where the trial judge was considering some evidence with regard to your client and some evidence with regard to the mother. But is it fair to infer that since they were tried together and they were both found guilty, that the judge determined that neither of them were watching the child and the child when the child got out?
Is that
a reasonable inference from the record?
I think the record is silent on the exact point, so we can't say one way or the other. I understand that. But I still don't think there's enough evidence to show specifically what the appellant did that was willful either by act or omission that created the circumstances. Well, the circumstances were bad. However, the only evidence we really have, and maybe the judge didn't believe him, but that when he left, the child was left with the mother and the friend.
Of what significance is it about the defendant's statement of assuming full responsibility?
I don't know what to make of that. There's not enough context in my mind. If someone says I take responsibility at an arraignment, if that is used without any further detail as a confession to show that he's admitting to the crime, I don't think that's clear enough to be a factor that a judge could rest his decision based solely on that.
Well, did the trial judge base it even in part on that?
I don't remember specifically when he made his ruling. As if he mentioned that, he mentioned the state of the room and the state of the hotel and the state of
There was no objection to that evidence coming in.
There was not.
That's evidence that's in there for what it's worth. For what the trier fact would give it.
Yes. But I think in a totality of the circumstances of really pointing to a willful act or omission by the appellant, I think the evidence is sufficient, insufficient, and that the charge should have been struck. Thank you.
Ms. Darren?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Leah Darren for the Commonwealth. With regard to the sufficiency of the evidence to convict the defendant of contributing to the delinquency of the minor, his child, a 2-year-old boy, the undisputed evidence in this case is that the defendant was the father of a 2-year-old boy found wandering in a hotel parking lot at 3 o'clock in the morning. He was luckily heard by another hotel resident and taken in by the front desk person, and the police were called. When the defendant, this was at 3 o'clock in the morning, when the defendant was interviewed before noon on that same day, so within hours, he testifies that he left the hotel in a cab at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and that his son was with him out in the parking lot. So the undisputed evidence is that the...
Where is that, counsel?
It's in the videotape, Your Honor, where the... and I have that...
It's during the interview.
Yes, Your Honor. It's during the interview. So when he was interviewed and the video was played, I think that is it... I'm sorry, I didn't
have
that transcript reference, but that the video was admitted. And then also we have the Child Protective Services representative, Kelly Young, testifying that at the preliminary hearing, the defendant took full responsibility for what had happened to his son. In addition to the child being left out in the parking lot alone, we have the circumstances of the child's living conditions. He was living in a hotel with his parents, a hotel full of strangers. When the police entered this hotel room, they found a bathtub full of water. They found evidence of prescription and illegal drugs that were accessible to the child. It's the Commonwealth's position that, of course, the court is aware that direct evidence of guilt is not necessary. We certainly have the defendant's statement to the police and his statement at the preliminary hearing, which we would contend is direct evidence. But
counsel, let me just ask you this. Is your position that the defendant's comments during the interview about the 3 o'clock in the morning with the child, is that what refutes the hypothesis of innocence that he, in fact, left the child with the mother?
The evidence of his statement in that interview, coupled with his statement taking full responsibility, that's right. So the evidence collectively was plainly sufficient to show that this parent contributed to an act or omission that rendered the child in need of services, in need of supervision, and abused and neglected as defined by statute. So we contend that the evidence was sufficient to support that conviction. With regard to the felony failure to appear, I'm not quite sure what counsel's argument is with regard to that conviction, except for the fact that I'm looking at the record at pages 236 through 239 of the appendix, and I don't see any objection that the court in the case was applying the wrong standard of review. So when you look at the court's statements on those transcript pages, it's clear that in this particular case, the defendant received some information from which he assumed his case had been continued. The court certainly wasn't required to accept that statement. And furthermore, the court went on to say that what the defendant could have done by contacting his attorney or contacting the court to verify what he says he heard and the reason he didn't show up. This was not the defendant's first rodeo. He was a convicted felon. He had several priors for misdemeanors involving moral turpitude. And when the evidence is viewed in the totality, it was plainly sufficient to convict the defendant of felony failure to appear.
Let me just ask you one question, counsel. Did the trial court make any kind of factual finding regarding the credibility of the appellant's testimony that he thought his court date had changed?
He did not, but I don't believe the court was required to do that for this court to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, which would mean that the court must disregard all evidence in the defendant's favor. And so his statement as to why he thought that would be disregarded under that test. We note also that there's no question that the defendant received notice of the court date, and under the Williams case, which we've cited in our brief, the failure to appear after notice is prima facie evidence that the failure to appear is willful. The evidence we submit is more than sufficient to support both convictions, and we ask the court to affirm the judgment of the circuit court. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Mayors.
Thank you. Just briefly, back to the contributing to the link to the minor, the willful standard that's been laid out in Collado and Ellis, which I know is in more of the child abuse and neglect standard, but I think those code sections are similar enough. I think it's the same definition of willful, which is an act which is intentional or knowing or voluntary as distinguished from accidental, with a bad purpose or without justifiable excuse. And what we do know is in that same interview, and I don't believe it's inconsistent in that interview of the timing when he left and the timing he said, well, the mother and the friend were there, and I left the child with them when I left, and they went up to the room. And there's really no other evidence other than the fact that the boy was found out in the hotel to suggest otherwise.
Near the parking lot at about the same time that Dad said he left.
And the evidence, I would say the state of the hotel room is, I'm not even sure it's enough to be circumstantial. I mean, there are pills there, or pill bottles everywhere, that were untested.
But the roaming around outside alone, forget about all the information from or evidence relating to the hotel room. The fact that the child is roaming around outside, and the fact that your client says he's taking full responsibility.
I think the fact alone that the child was outside we need to know how the child became outside and who was monitoring him at that time. And the only thing we know, and of course it's the defendant's whole statement, but the only thing we know is that he says, the only thing that's in evidence is that when he left, the child was with the mother and the girlfriend. Now, if you're a parent and you leave your child with the other parent without some sort of knowledge that something bad is occurring, I don't know how that can be attributable to you if something bad does occur.
Yeah, I guess my only question was, absent everything in the motel room, if you assume that the evidence supports the willful aspect, then roaming outside alone is in need of services.
I think it would
you
be...
You conceded that.
It would be in need of services, correct. Okay. I don't think I can... Just the way he was
right.
found, absolutely.
Okay.
But the court did, in its findings, specifically not only refer to being outside roaming around unsupervised at 3 o'clock in the morning, but also to the conditions in the hotel room, including assume that Mr. Brown left the child with the mother in a hotel room where there are all these drugs and a bathtub full of water. The trial court found that as one of the factors in a child in need of supervision or services?
I think the court was wrong on that. I think there was insufficient evidence to find that. We don't know what those pills were. We don't know what the state of the room was when the child left. We don't know if those items were being abused at all.
What about the bathtub full of water?
I don't know if that on its own is enough to create a risk sufficient enough to meet the statute.
But we're not looking at that factor alone, are we?
Well, we're not.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Thank
we'll
you.
Step down and greet counsel and thereafter take up the case of Bass versus